Deadly Grounds Coffee knows how important your coffee is to you. Every batch is roasted to perfection with a unique special method that brings out the richest, deepest, smoothest flavor you'll ever find. We're coffee freaks too, and deadly serious about our brew. Just one sip and you'll know why we say, once you go deadly, you don't go back. It's truly coffee to die for. So when you're ready to get a little deadly, get online and order yours at getdeadly.com. It's coffee so good, it's scary.
Greetings and welcome once again to another episode of the Retro Reduct Bucephala Podcast, the only show that celebrates all the things that made growing up awesome. We are part of the Dorkening and Inebriarch Podcast Networks, and sometimes I pronounce things correctly. We're brought to you tonight by Deadly Grounds Coffee, coffee to die for. I'm your host. Of course, my name is Parasite Steve, a.k.a. Steve Ann Sampson. And although I am cohortless tonight, I have an awesome guest because this right here, folks, this is one of those episodes of The Brig. And this week in The Brig, we have a guy who's really sharpened his quill on the grinding wheel we call horror. Michael Miller is a writer and journalist whose columns and interviews have appeared in such publications as Horoscope Magazine, Horror Patch, and most recently, Horror Hound Magazine. Michael, welcome to The Brig.
Thanks, man. Glad to be here. That's all you'll get from me tonight.
Oh, that's it. It was just, okay, it's our shortest one ever. It's fine. It was good. It was clean. It was in and out. No problem. And I just want to say, you know, pay no attention to all the disembodied limbs that are kind of strewn about the cell down there tonight. You know, I was going to cobble together a zombie werewolf out of spare parts for you, but
that would have been cool.
I mean, I know it would have been cool, damn it. But, you know, I ran out of time, so.
And I thought we were friends.
I know. But I did leave some kombucha in the little mini fridge down there, so.
Yeah, about anything that's disgusting, it's that. God.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the theme, man. It's all disgusting stuff. But, you know, it promotes good gut health, unlike the spare zombie werewolf parts. But anyway, so thanks for coming on the show. We're happy to have you. We're stoked. I'm going to dive right in. You're a writer, man. So how'd you get started? How'd you get started in writing? And was it always horror?
Yeah, you know, ever since I was a kid and through high school, I liked to write. I was writing short stories. I was an avid reader, voracious, you know, Stephen King, you name it. And I wanted to do what they did. But, you know, I just never really did much with it outside of high school. I instead went after my other dream, which was law enforcement, and did that for over 20 years. And then that got old and I'm sick of it. So decided to give writing a go.
That's freaking awesome, man. Like, so you come back. So that's a like later in life sort of deal. And now you're writing for all these really cool horror magazines. I mean, Horror Hound is absolutely nuts. How long have you been with them?
I think 2 years, maybe going on three. Yeah, been a while now.
Nice. Yeah, they've been around for quite some time. I was trying to find, like, I couldn't find the actual, like, original publication date, but I did find stuff as old as 2009.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's over 15 years, I know, so.
Very cool. I mean, they are, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the heir apparent to Fangoria and famous Monsters of Filmland and stuff like that. Very high quality stuff. And I mean, just the covers, because really you couldn't possibly be the heir apparent to such publications if you didn't have this insane cover art that just grabs people by the nuts. And and they definitely do. So horror is your thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what you were all, you know, Stephen King, you mentioned, are you reading primarily horror when you were a kid and when you were writing short stories back then? Is it just always in that genre?
Yeah, and, you know, interestingly enough, it was my mom that got me into Stephen King at a very, very early age. you know, I tell everybody this story. So if I told you this before and you don't want to hear it again, just tell me.
No, tell it. Okay. And God bless your mom, by the way. She's clearly doing the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a mama's boy. So, but, whenever she would be doing some housework or whatever, and this is my earliest recollection of anything horror. It stuck with me. I remember her plopping me down in front of the TV while she did whatever it is that moms do. And the trailer for It's Alive came on. And
the evil baby movie.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if you've seen the trailer or not. But it's,
I must have.
Okay, it's creepy as hell. Okay. And even today, it's kind of creepy. But yeah, it starts out at this bassinet, you know, and it's got this lightly music going on. And then spinning, comes back around, you know, and there's this little claw hanging out, scared the shit out of me. I slept in my mom's bed for a month. And I was like 3 years old at this time.
Sure, sure, yeah.
You know, and then she would then take me. I saw Jaws in the theater. But it was the 1979 Salem's Lot that really stuck with me. She let me watch it with her. And of course that, you know, creepy little fucker, Ralphie Glick, you know, there at the window.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
the kid at the window. That's when everybody mentions that. It's so creepy.
You know, and that, you know, and then Mrs. Glick, I mean, that little battle there in the autopsy room, all of that, like, I mean, it left this, I don't want to say scar, but it left this mark on me that I was fascinated with it from that point on. She even took me to see the Shining in the theater.
Okay.
Which I would have been not quite 10, I don't think. And so, you know, room, was it 237? Yeah. The old lady, well, she wasn't old at first. When she comes out of the shower or out of the bathtub, my mom's like, "Michael, cover your eyes." So, you know, of course I cover them, but they're spread. So I think that was my first naked lady too.
I'm sorry about that. That sucks.
yeah, because it's kind of screwed up there, you know, eventually. But yeah.
But yeah,
she was a Stephen King fan. So
that's awesome.
That
was right when he was just like getting started too. I mean, that must have been early 70s, right?
Yeah. Like right she I know I was struggling in school with reading, and I was going to a fairly big school, elementary school, I think it's first grade, and I wasn't able to pick up on it, and the teacher had too many kids that, you know, she couldn't take the time. But then we ended up moving to a small farming community where the teacher was able to take me aside and work with me. Well, my mom helped me out some at home and handed me the book, Salem's Lot. And she worked with me on it, sounding out words, explaining things to me. And then eventually she's like, you know what? Here's the dictionary. This is how it works. You look it up.
Wow.
And from that moment on, man.
Trial by fire. Just do it.
Yep.
And Salem's Lot is not a short book, so that's
But I found out it was scarier than the TV show.
So you had already seen the TV movie and then you were reading the book after. Okay.
Yep.
I love that TV movie. That movie, I mean, obviously, you know, it's Tobe Hooper and you know, I think the Glick boy at the window is the main scene that everybody talks about. And there's also the one that always also gets me because that is that the kid at the window. I mean, it does take the cake, but when, that scene, when Mike is turned into a vampire and he's in the rocking chair and you just see his eyes glow.
Yes. Yeah.
That is awesome.
He says something, I can't remember. It was right on the tip of my tongue, but like you'll sleep with a dead teacher or something like that.
Mm.
Yeah. Creepy as hell.
Wicked creepy. And they do this, like, I mean, you know, right? And this is why I love terror. I love terror is my favorite of the Stephen King types of horror, you know, the gross out, the terror, the I can't remember what the third one is, but like or just pure horror. But terror is like building atmosphere and in anticipation, because when he's in that chair, you do know that he's a vampire. He looks off, you get it, you get what's happening. But it takes him like 10 or 15 seconds before he really looks up enough for you to really see that reflection of his eyes. And you can see that there's something really wrong with his eyes, because he's just kind of looking down just barely enough. You know, it's just so subtle and so good. I also just, I love Barlow so much in that movie.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
It's the only, it's like, it's so rare when a movie or, you know, any sort of adaptation from a book, like, is better. And I wouldn't say that the movie is better than the book, but I do prefer the Barlow of the miniseries.
Sure, yeah, I do
because
too.
He's just amazing looking, and he's completely horrifying. And in the book, he's not really scary. He's just, you know, he just talks. He's just a dude. I'm like, okay, well, he would be like, I'm picturing Rutger Hauer as I'm reading it. I'm like, oh, you know, yeah. I'm not really that scared of Rutger Hauer. Like, maybe because he played the vampire in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I don't know, but that's who I was picturing as I'm reading it. But that's the only book I've actually read twice in a row is Salem's.
Well, interesting that you said Rutger Hauer because he played Barlow in the TNT version.
Oh, so maybe that's why it's in my head. Then maybe that's why it was in my head. Okay.
But yeah, no, I get what you're saying. And he was actually perfectly cast for that. Mm-hmm. And I know he went that direction with it to, you know, hew closer to the book.
Mm.
Yeah, it was scary, but not, yeah, it's not the same. It's not the same.
Oh, man, Reggie Nadler as that, like, blue Nosferatu is just nuts. He's just, and he makes that like pig squealing sound or something. And my God, really just good choices. I think Toby Hooper made really good choices. It's very 70s. But it's
very dated, but I think it encapsulates the, if that's the correct word or not. It's been a long day, man. but it feels like the book. It's the same dread as the book.
Yes. Encapsulates, I think is the word you're going for. Yeah. It absolutely does. It does. And so obviously you're going to cut things out, but it never betrays any of the core like scenes or anything like that.
Go ahead. Oh, have you ever read the uncensored version or the unedited version?
You know, I'm not sure what version that I have now that you say that. I didn't actually know there was two versions.
Yeah, it's kind of the same. It's like a special edition that's out, and it has all the excised material. It's added. It doesn't add it into the story, but it's like after the story, then you can read all the cut out parts.
Oh, no. No, I haven't, no.
You should. It's... okay, so like Doc Cody, the doctor that helps him, like in the film, he, you know, you see him, he falls, or no, in the film, James Mason picks him up and impales him on antlers.
Yeah,
but in the book, he falls on a table saw. In the edited or the unedited version, it's rats. He's eaten alive by rats.
Oh damn!
And it was scary as hell. I wish they'd have left it in.
Yeah. I am a fan of a good antler impaling, though. There was a good one in the Evil Dead the show there, the Ash versus Evil Dead show. There was
I love that one.
Impaling.
Yep.
That's really cool. Now, so you just have proved your pedigree, man. I mean, like from you know toddlerdom, you've been weaned on like adult horror, which is pretty freaking awesome. So, I mean, horror is where I live too.
Yeah,
and I love it, you know, and I got, you know, a slower, much later start. I've talked about it lots of times on the show, but like, you know, my parents were like not really fans, so I didn't really get to see stuff. So when we went to the video store, like I was obsessed with the various covers and like trying to, you know, like just sneak a peek at what I could kind of thing. I'm like, oh, they're never going to rent this stuff. But eventually, so then, you know, it's like when you deny a kid something, they just want it more. And then, you know, when I finally came of age, it was like, that's all I wanted to see. But no, that's really cool. So, okay. So you have your whole career, in law enforcement, and then you're like, I'm going to go back. I'm going to try that writing thing out again. I love horror. Going to write horror, all that good stuff. So tell us how you got involved with Horror Hound magazine specifically.
Well, that's, Well, it's a little bit of a story, so if I get to rambling, just say, hey, you're
rambling away.
All right, so I know I was getting tired of law enforcement. I just get sick of seeing, I see the bad all the time.
It's and, the real horror.
Yeah, and it wears on you. And I remember I was just kind of browsing through Facebook, and Michael Juvenal, he's the individual that runs Horror Patch. He had kind of put out an ad looking for writers. And so I reached out to him, and I started writing reviews for him. And then I had saw that Fledgling magazine, Horoscope, was also looking for writers. And I reached out to Daniel. And Daniel, if you hear this, I'm sorry, I'll probably butcher your last name, but it's like Karuba, something like that. So, yeah, don't kill me for that. And so I was writing articles for him, primarily about serial killers. So like the Zodiac.
Okay, cool.
And there was another one. What's his face? Oh, my God, now I'm drawing a blank on him. Long time ago, Holmes.
H.H. Holmes.
Thank you, H.H. I knew it was two.
America's first serial killer.
Yeah, and I mean some really dark stuff. But I know I was trying to, I was reaching out to Rue Morgue as well. I wasn't getting anywhere with that. And I was friends with a couple of other writers, Paul Canellis and Chris Hammond. And they wrote for Rue Morgue. And I know I was talking to them about it. And at some point, Nathan Hanneman just reached out to me and asked me to write a review, and then, you know, at the last page of Whorehound, you had the Whorehound Hall of Fame.
Right.
And cool. Yeah. He asked me to write that one for Return of the Living Dead, which, you know, if you're a horror fan, you love Return of the Living Dead. So, I mean, yeah, that was an easy one. It was, you know, basically my audition, and then from that point on, I've been writing for Whorehound.
Excellent. Wow, what a great first movie to have to write about.
Sure, yeah, pure, an easy one.
Definitely, just pure joy, that one. Mm-hmm. So that's really cool, man. So since you concentrate, I know you do a lot of interviews.
Yes.
And is that strictly what you do for Horror Hound, or do you do other sorts of articles as well?
Well, kind of at the first I was kind of doing a lot of interviews of directors and actors from films. Like I interviewed Neil Blomkamp.
Oh, sweet. Before.
Yeah, very cool guy. I was very, very nervous. That was actually my... Huh?
District 9 guy, right?
Yeah, yep. Chappie. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, a lot of people don't seem to like Chappie. I love that movie so much. But
I liked Chappie. I liked Real Steel better, that's the thing.
Real Steel was good, yeah. I loved Real Steel. And then they, I don't know if you've seen the shorts that he's got, the Oat Studio shorts. Those are amazing.
They are. Yeah.
I love those. But yeah. I interviewed him for Demonic that, and then let's see, who else? William Sadler, John Jarrett, Wolf Creek. He was a fun one.
Nice. I love William Sadler. How was he?
Oh man, he was great, really sweet guy. I kind of threw him for a loop with a question. So I was interviewing him for Salem's Lot. Again, Salem's Lot. The one that hasn't been released, but I just found out, or there was an article today, I think, from Variety said that.
Oh, he's in the new one.
Yeah, he's okay. He's in the new one, but he would not confirm what character he's playing. So I wasn't able to find out exactly, but at any rate,
have they said any of the cast? Is it possible that he's Barlow?
It's possible, but there confirmed, so I can't say one way or the other. Okay. They haven't published it yet because we've kind of been waiting to see where they're going to go with it. You know, if they're going to even release it or not. But I guess they are. They confirmed today, I think, on Variety magazine. I think it was the article. That it is going to be released to streaming on Max.
I did see that, yeah.
Yeah, so good. I was hoping it would happen. But I we were talking about Salem's Lot, and then towards the end there, I wanted to ask him how it was to perform martial arts and nude for Die Hard.
Yeah, Die Hard 2.
Yep.
Yeah.
He busted up.
Go ahead. He's great.
He said, if I remember right, this has been a while back, a couple years ago, that there wasn't supposed to be a lot of people in there when he did this, but I guess there was more people than what he was expecting. And he wasn't in there by himself. Good guy. Oh, well. Very, very nice guy. Very, very nice guy.
I'm of the age that he's always going to be deaf to me. So.
Yeah. I can get that. Yeah. That we talked about that with his, Yugoslavian or Slavic accent that he used.
Right.
Sooner
or later, you dance with the Reaper. Get down with your bad self.
That was the first Bill and Ted movie I saw. It was the second one. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it made me a huge fan of him. But he'll always be the Grim Reaper.
Such a surprise, like, just a wonderful character. Like, going back to that movie, even today, like, he just steals every single scene of that movie. Absolutely. Yep. Just kills it as Death.
Oh, yeah.
But no, he was always one of those guys that I sort of really, you know, was happy to see in anything. Kind of like, you know, okay, just like Roger Hauer, same thing. Like, oh, that's cool. Yeah. All right.
He's
Clancy Brown to me.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of those just iconic actors, you know.
I'm just always happy to see Clancy Brown. Always happy to see like certain people. Yeah. It's just always great.
Now he's, you mentioned Clancy. That's a dream interview. I'd love to conduct. Always wanted to talk to that man.
Oh man. Yeah. So Clancy. He's so cool, man. He's just still going. Still got one of the best voices in the business.
Yes, he does. Very recognizable. He was great for.
Sorry, go ahead.
He was great in Thor as that fire demon that Thor Ragnarok. Yes. He's like, it's the crown.
Yeah. I am Ragnar. I am what is it? Asgard's doom.
Yep. I'm gonna knock that tear off your head.
Yeah, he's like, oh, it's just my head. Oh. That's the crown? Oh, I thought that was just head. That's such a funny one. Good shit, man. And William Sadler's in the MCU as well. He got to be the president for like a couple random movies. And I think it was in like an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something too. Like,
yeah. Yep. One. Yep. He was in Iron Man 3 and then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I was loyal. I stuck with that, even though that first season was kind of hard to get through.
It was hard to get through. And then it got significantly better every season, but I never saw the last one. I was kind of done by that point, but it was not.
Yeah. By the time they were in space, I just kind of dropped it from that point. So,
right. And it went one season after that too.
Mm-hmm. But.
So, okay. I was actually going to ask you bucket list interviews. So Clancy Brown, total bucket list interview. Anybody else that you would love, you know, you'd love to interview?
Stephen King.
Oh man. Yeah.
Stephen King. I would just be even happy if he just say, hi, Mike. And I'd be good. I could die. Like, you know,
how you doing there, Mike? How you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
What you got to do is you got to just go to the like farmer's market in Bangor, like all the time. And eventually you'll just run into him.
Yeah, it seems like that's where everybody else meets him at. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think it'll ever happen. That man was so, okay. And then here's another story. So my childhood was, you know, I grew up on a farm and it was very abusive. My stepfather, and it was hard life, but Stephen King's books and my mom helped me get through it. And in particular, The Talisman. I don't know if you ever read that one or not.
I have not ever read The Talisman, no.
Man. You've got to read The Talisman. You know, the Duffer brothers are supposedly bringing that to Netflix, so.
Oh, okay. All right. So Stranger King.
Yeah. Hey, nice.
You can take that. That's a total name for an article for Horror Hound.
Yeah, awesome. I know when I heard the rumor about that, you know, I was just all of a sudden I'm reaching out to Netflix. Hey, I want in on this. And I did the same thing with The Dark Tower with Mike Flanagan. But yeah, his stories, you know, they, you know, kind of helped me get through it. So
that's awesome, man.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely at the top of my bucket list.
Oh, that's a great top of the heap for sure. You know, I mean, it's amazing, you know, I mean, that's the power of art, right? Like that, you know, any of us who are in the arts in general, you know, we're making things that, you know, hopefully touch people, hopefully move people. And, you know, even if it's crazy crap, like, you know, monsters and vampires and, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, there's always more to horror than surface anyway. That's what people, I think, who kind of aren't into the genre, you know, they think it's all surface. And I mean, I'm sure there are, you know, there are shallow movies we could both name and stuff, but not the good stuff. The good stuff is not all surface. The good
stuff
has a lot to say and has a lot of soul. And, you know, I mean, that's really, really cool that, you know, he was able to, you know, his stuff that his shit he was just writing, you know, it meant so much to you. And like, how many of us can name just like a band or a song or even, you know, something like that that just really got us through a hard time, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's really cool. Absolutely. That's the power of art, man. It's amazing.
Yeah. You know, and you're a writer yourself. I mean, you tell me who inspired you. I'm curious.
Well, lots of people inspired me, man. I love to meet people all the time, and I'm always trying to, you know, I'm always being inspired by just people's hustle, people's, you know, drive and talent and whatever. I mean, as far as like writers you would know, I mean, I think the ones that inspired me the most tend to be, you know, top of my list is Joe R. Lansdale, for his ability to write literally any genre whatsoever, and into effortlessly his humor is always so not forced. It's so natural always. Even if it's not a funny book, there's always going to be some Joe Lansdale funny shit in there. And also, I mean, like his dialogue is like my favorite. He has such a talent for like just real everyman dialogue, just prose that feel like it's like, I don't know. I don't really know what to call it. It's like poetry in its own way. Right. The way he's able to just this blue collar, you know, Shakespeare that he writes. Mm-hmm. And I just adore the man. Also, you know, I mean, I love weird westerns and horror westerns. So anybody who writes weird westerns, horror westerns are, you know, they're my friend. But also Neil Gaiman. Neil Gaiman is like, you know, anything Neil writes is also just poetry. I just, you know, can't get enough of him, that guy. But Stephen King's great, man. I love Joe Hill, though. I really like Joe Hill a lot.
Yeah. Born was amazing. In fact, I'd call that my favorite Joe Hill book.
Which one?
Horns.
Horns. That's your favorite. Wow. You know, my favorite is, I mean, Horns is great. I think my favorite is Heart-Shaped Box because it was the first one I read. I mean, I know it's his first novel, but Horns was already out. I think Nosferatu was already out by the time I read Heart-Shaped Box. And and then I sort of read them all. And I just really loved, there was something about Heart-Shaped Box that you know what it is? I love the protagonist of that book. You know, he created this, one of my favorite all-time archetypes is the aging asshole former rock star.
Absolutely.
I feel like no matter what it's in, it could be played by Bill Nye, you know, not Bill Nye, the science guy, the guy from,
I know who you're talking about.
You know what I mean? Like that guy is epitomly that rock star. I mean, he kind of has played that character a couple of times anyway. Still Crazy is a great flick. He was kind of that character.
Yeah.
And he's kind of that character in what's that? Love Actually. He also played dropping rom coms now. Christmas rom coms.
Yeah, we just admitted this to everybody right there.
Yeah, But yeah, no, I mean, lots of stuff. But I go back to, I love the old pulps, man. I love the old pulps. Robert E. Howard is my guy.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, I was reading that when I was a kid too. Conan, definitely.
Conan, Solomon Kane. Also, he's just a really prolific horror writer.
And oh, yeah.
He has a lot. There's a great book called, it's just called The Horror Stories of Robert E. Howard. And
yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's like my favorite short story collection of all time. And of all time. And Solomon Kane is on the cover, and there are two Solomon Kane stories, and I do not think there's a Conan in there. I'm pretty sure there is not. There's two Solomon Kanes, and there's like the story Worms of the Earth stars Bran MacMorn, who's like his Pictish Conan, basically. It's just another, because like Cull was basically Conan, and Bran MacMorn was basically Conan. But Bran MacMorn is the guy in Worms of the Earth. But wow, what a freaking book. Also the story of Pigeons from
Red
Hell.
Nails, was that? Yeah, Pigeons from Hell. I remember that so one. With Red Nails, was that a Conan one, or was that
Conan, yeah.
Okay, that is
like essentially the Conan story that I don't understand why somebody doesn't just make. I feel like
I've heard people talk about that too.
I feel like, so Red Nails, for those who don't know, it's actually like kind of a long story, because the Conan stories are all different lengths, you know. I mean, there's only one novella, which is Hour of the Dragon, and then all the other ones are like, I mean, some of them are damn short and some of them are like, you know, kind of middle. But this one, you know, it's a little bit longer, but it all takes place in a very confined environment. So it's sort of like, I feel like if you made Red Nails and you did it justice, it would be similar to that Carl Urban Judge Dredd movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was Judge Dredd's Red Nails. It all took place in like a high rise, very limited sort of, you know, environment you're going to see. Yep. And it was also like a day in the life.
Yep.
It didn't take place over months or years. It was one day.
It wasn't a saga or anything like that.
Right. It was one day in the life. And that Red Nails is that. It's very much like him and this one other character are trapped in this like weird sort of like it's like an enclosed town that they've there's dangerous things outside, so the townspeople specifically have walled themselves in, but somehow Conan slipped in and is trying to get out and he can't. And there's just basically, you know, the warring factions. It's basically like the you know, what are the two like hillbilly clans that were always fighting?
The Hatfields and the McCoys.
There you go. Yeah, it's like the Hatfields and the McCoys, right? And he does what Clint Eastwood does in the spaghetti westerns, and like First Man with No Name.
Yep.
Yeah, he's
High Plains.
No. It's not High Plains. Good and the Bad and the Ugly is the third one. And so it's a Fistful of Dollars and then a Few Dollars More. So Fistful of Dollars. Right? Okay. So yeah, okay. What he does is he's just this like totally middle of the road character, completely playing both sides against each other.
Right.
You know, he's just in for himself. And so that's what Conan ends up doing essentially in Red Nails. It's just such a great filmable story.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. You know, when you mentioned Joe Lansdale earlier, I was going to ask you, I'm sure you've read each of these that I'm going to bring up. These are just two of his that really stand out in my head.
You say that now I won't have read them, because I'm not going to be the true fan. Anyway, go ahead. Let's see.
Oh yeah, you are. Yeah. You're going to know these. This one, obviously you're going to know, is Bubba Hotep. And then the other one was The Night They Missed the Horror Show.
No, I haven't.
Okay. So that one kind of sort of inspired my screenplay that I've been working on. And I hope to tell him about that at some point, but, it's just these two guys, and you know, they're rednecks, they're racists and all that. And they're just driving around, and, they end up picking up, or they're coming across a black schoolmate of theirs who is trying to get away from these older high school guys that are going to beat him up and from another town. And so they rescue this black kid, and they come across this dead dog in the road, and they decide just for fun, they're going to tie this dog to the back of their car and drive around with it.
Well, they end up,
you know, down this like dirt road, and they come across like this organization that's making like snuff films, and they come out and see them, and they end up shooting the black kid, and they throw him in the trunk, and then they see that they've been dragging this dead dog who's like in pieces. Well, that really makes these mobsters, these snuff film directors, you know, mad. So they put one of the other kids in the trunk with the dead kid, and then they tie the other kid up to the chain instead of the dog, and then they push it off this bridge into this creek full of snakes and stuff like that. And that's how it ends.
Wow.
messed up, but this is Joe Lansdale.
Super messed up.
I came across it in the book called Splatterpunk. It came out like in the mid to late 80s. I think that's where I read it the first time. But stuck in the head, man. Stuck in my head.
Yeah, I mean, that's what a good story will do. And even if it's really, really terrible like that, like, you know, I don't know what the moral of it is, but...
Dude, it's so dark. I mean, it's so dark, but he turned... There's funny stuff to it. I mean, it's just this way of how he writes.
Yeah, that's what he does. And he pulls no punches with the race card. I mean, like, man.
Oh, none.
He shows, shows us exactly how ugly we are, like, as a
yeah, and I think they were supposed to be going to see Night of the Living Dead or something. So that kind of gives you like the time period of when this has taken place, somewhere around in that same time. So it was interesting. He's one of my favorite writers as well. So
very cool. Very cool. Hopefully, you know, someday you'll get to interview Joe and Steve both for Horror Hound or some such publication. That'd be really cool.
That would be so cool. Clive Barker up there too. That'd be great.
Oh, Clive Barker, I just saw was doing his last, he's doing his last con tour.
Right? Yeah, I read that too.
Yeah. No more appearances. He says he wants to just focus on writing till the end, and that's what he's going to do.
He kind of was a little cryptic about that too. I'm wondering if he's going to pick up Nightbreed. I'm hoping.
Dude, there is no movie on the face of the planet that I want remade more than Nightbreed. No,
I agree with you.
Movie. I really wish he would get to remake it.
Yeah.
To be perfectly honest.
Yeah, he had a lot of issues going on there with, you know, you know the story behind it. And
yeah, there's a lot of bullshit, you know. Did you ever read the comics that were his screenplay for the second movie that never got made?
No, I did not.
Super great. Definitely worth tracking down. It's basically like picks up right after the first movie where, you know, Midian gets destroyed.
Right.
And so they have to find a new home. So now the main character there, you know, Boone, who's Cabal. He is now, you know, their leader for better or worse. And, you know, certain ones don't want to follow him and other ones are like, no, tough shit. He's our leader. And so they're all kind of like, you know, going, and he's just literally driving into middle America, trying to find a new place that can be Midian. And there's a character that I think was excised from the movie, unfortunately, who is the like living. It's I can't exactly remember. It's been a little while since I've read it, but it's like essentially like the living records of their society.
Wow. It's like
there's one character who basically we have to make sure that she survives and gets over there because she's like the repository for everything that's Nightbreed. And it's something to do with like an ability that, you know, this creature has or whatever. And it's them dealing with humans, but there's also a rogue faction of breed that are kind of just being like, well, you know, they made us not kill people in Midian, and now Midian's gone, and screw that, we're just gonna eat people. So they're also dealing with like this rogue group, and you know, they don't really come off evil either.
Sure, it's sort of like, I agree.
It's interesting. That's what Barker does, you know. I mean, he has that way of making demons, you know, sympathetic somehow. I really think you should track it down.
I intend to.
His original screenplay. They turned it into a comic like back in the day. But there's a great collected that has that and a whole bunch of other Nightbreed comics. And honestly, the Nightbreed comics are better than the movie by a lot. I really wish, like, because that really just has such a wealth of amazing ideas that world. And I just, it kills me that the movie's not good. And no matter which version it is, it's like, it's never good. There's a better version, but it's never good. And I just
want it
to be good so bad. I want it to be great. I know it could be.
It could, agree. I agree with you 100% with today's effects, the technology of what they could do, and do not, I mean, if you want to use CGI to touch things up, but it's definitely got to be, practical.
Practical all the way,
But what they could do with it now, Decker, I wanted to find out what was going on with Decker once, the priest brings him back to life.
100%. 100%. What an awesome character. Played by Cronenberg of all people, what a freaking gift to horror that character is. I swear to God, gets no credit at all. And he's such an amazing masked killer. He's just forgotten because he's, within another movie. It's easy to forget he's even there if you haven't seen it in a while. And, or if you're not like a real fan, maybe you saw it like once or twice or something. And it's easy to just forget he even exists. And he is just scary and brutal, and that zipper, that weird askew zipper mouth that he has, and the button eyes. I mean, he is just awesome.
Yeah. And they kind of just briefly touch on how savage of a serial killer he is, and what they could do with that. I wanted to know more, but since you brought up the comic, I am going to track that down.
Definitely do that. Yeah, for sure. And then you got to also get Cronenberg as well.
Yeah, man, I've always wanted to talk to Cronenberg, especially The Dead Zone and The Fly. Always want to talk.
Oh my god. Yeah. I mean, come on, the Fly is just the ultimate body horror movie as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I feel like I'm saying that kind of willy-nilly, but no, I mean I can stick to that. I think it's pretty much the ultimate. If it's not the best, it's in the top three. I mean, it's just awesome.
You know, it was really, I'd seen Videodrome before I saw The Fly. Okay. And the reason I sought out Videodrome was because the very first Fangoria magazine I ever bought was the one with the cover for Videodrome with the guts coming out of the TV.
Sure, yeah.
And because it caught my eye. So, of course, I got to have it. And then, so I watched Videodrome. I didn't really understand it because I think I was a little too young for it. But then I saw The Fly. And yeah, in my head, I agree with you. It's the ultimate body horror. Videodrome kind of touches on it somewhat, but The Fly really, really nails it.
I mean, the Hellraiser series definitely up there. But even American Werewolf in London, I mean, you can't take away the effects.
Yeah. And then you got, The Howling, with Eddie there, with the condom bladders or whatever they used on his face and stuff. I'd never seen anything like that, and just, blew my young mind away.
Yeah. Robert Picardo.
Oh yeah, yep, absolutely. And it was amazing when I found out he was who Eddie was, because at the time, who the hell is Robert Picardo? But as you go through life, and I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, I know. It's like he was a turned Voyager. Like,
yeah, exactly. He's a dude in inner space. He's a trash man in the Burbs.
He's the trash guy in the Burbs. It's him and Dick Miller.
Yep. So it's like, oh my god, this goofy guy, is the scary as hell werewolf.
I know he's just so different looking with hair. He's got long hair.
Yep.
He's also the one who ends up banging the girl gremlin in Gremlins 2.
Oh yeah, that's right. At the end of it. Yep.
I mean, she wore him down. She wore him down. What are you gonna do? So horror, it's really fun talking to you. Obviously, we're both big fans of all the same crap and everything like that. So back to Horror Hound. So magazines, great. But there's another really big thing that Horror Hound does, which is the Horror Hound Weekend, and it's a long-running con. And I want to mention it because it is coming up very, very shortly. So this episode is airing before the weekend, but it is actually March 22nd through the 24th. And that is going to be at the Sharonville Convention Center in Cincinnati, Ohio. And if I could just do a little shameless plug, I'm actually going to be there with my very good friend, the Roughmaster General himself, Derek Rook, at the Rough House Publishing Table. We're going to be there rocking and shocking and selling our usual brand of mayhem and hanging out with Mr. Michael Miller as well, which is going to be pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah. I don't know. We're going to get drunk. I know that. We are.
You're like, no, we are. Well, I'll tell you what, it's going to be Saturday night because we're going to be driving straight through on Thursday and we're going to basically get right to the convention center just about in time, I think. So we're coming in from Massachusetts, but we're going to be there. It's going to be awesome. This is punk rock, man. This is us. This is exactly how it had to be done. You know, this isn't, you know, we're not into the lap of luxury, getting there nice, you know, a day early, having a relaxing night the night before. No, you know, it's like hit the road, gun it, you know, trunk full of brewskis, you know, whatever. Not to say we drink and drive. They're in the trunk, people.
Oh, no. Yeah.
We're going to enjoy them later. That's what I'm saying. But yeah, no, it's going to be an awesome time, man. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too. And, you know, just so you know, kind of giving you a heads up, there won't be anything wrong with your eyesight. I'm 5'3". Oh. You're like, who's that hairy kid that's coming up to us?
it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell on a little internet box, but fair enough.
Exactly.
I promise not to gape in shock.
And that's all right, man. Hey, you know what's even funnier is that, you know, I was a cop for over 20 years, and my partner was a female. Her name was Grace, and she was about 6 foot tall. So keep in mind, we show up at a scene where there's like, you know, some like husband's like going after his wife or whatever and stuff, but we step out. Total shock. Everybody odd stops. Couple. The odd couple, yeah. So it worked.
That's great, man. there is such a story in there. Have you thought of writing you guys as characters?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We showed up at a call one time. This guy was going after his wife. And he was just beating on the door, kicking on it. He didn't have his shirt on or anything like that. You know, he was on meth big time.
Oh yeah.
And you know, strong muscles, you know, stringy muscles and stuff. But we hop out and he takes off. So I'm giving chase, and she's right behind me, but I don't know that. And I'm telling this guy to get down on the ground. Well, he turns around immediately, raises his fist, and goes, "Get down on the ground, huh?" So I had my mace out already. I got him in the eyes. Well, she shot it over my head and also got him in the eyes with it. So he got like a double shot of it. And he's like, "Why'd you have to do that?"
I love how they just turn into these like whiny little crybabies. Okay. You're so mean.
I mean, that mace shit, that hurts. Man, it is bad. So, like, you know, we're around it at the time, you know, so we're also inhaling some of this. So
sure, yeah.
Everybody's crying. Everybody's got snot running out of their nose, you know. It's just, yeah, it's glamorous.
That's what I was just thinking. Like, if she's shooting it in an arc over your head, I mean, that's raining down all over you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So good times.
That's crazy, man. I mean, you really gotta like write that stuff down. I mean, you guys are like perfect characters. Like, that is really great.
It'd make a great.
It would make a great, lots of things. It would make a great story, a great series. It's your own Hap and Leonard.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding. That's good. Hap and Leonard. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that.
hell yeah. I love Hap and Leonard. But yeah, that's really interesting though, man. Good stuff. Do you have anything to do with putting on the con at all? Is there anything like, you help with, or are you just, you know, your staff, you go hang out?
Last year was first time I actually ever went. I'd never been to a con before in my life.
Oh, wow.
I wanted to experience it. So, unfortunately I'd paid for a lot of photo ops, which meant I was standing in line for the majority of the con. So I missed out on a great deal. But so this year I am helping with the film fest. I will be, moderating the Q&A parts on some of the after some of the shorts, the films, and you know, I wasn't really sure what I was getting myself into with that after I volunteered. And then I went to Planet Comic Con in Kansas City over this past weekend, and they had a panel for Ron Perlman and Charlie Hunnam, and I saw how they run that. I was like, what the hell did I get myself into? So
what panels are you running? Any cool people? There's a lot of cool people going to this, or you're not allowed to say.
There is. It's mainly, like I said, for the film fest and for the shorts that were nominated. And so that kind of thing. I don't have the list up in front of me, so I couldn't tell you.
Okay. But, sure. I was wondering if, like, you know, Henry Rollins or anything, Sam Raimi. Oh, I don't know.
No, but I do very much want to see Henry Rollins.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Sam Raimi's been doing a few cons, and I have some friends that actually just went to a con in Jersey last weekend to see him, and they got their pictures with him, and it's just absolutely so freaking awesome. Such a fan of that guy forever. Oh my God. I mean, the Evil Dead franchise is one of my, one of the horror franchises that's just in my heart too. Like, it's just big time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I feel like you can't really be a horror fan. And I know I hate that when people say that you're not really a horror fan if you don't blah, blah, blah. But I really feel that if you don't really care for Evil Dead, then why are you here?
Why are you here? You don't like Evil Dead? You don't like Return of the Living Dead? Like, what's your problem, man? So here's the one. I have a very unpopular horror opinion, and I'm interested because you are such a Stephen King fan.
Okay.
So what is your opinion on the movie The Shining versus the book? Do you like both? Do you prefer one? What's your take on that?
I like both. I liked McGarris's closer version, the telemovie with Steven Weber. I do like Kubrick's, because that was the first time I had even experienced The Shining. It was when my mom took me to see it.
Right, you said you got super young.
Yeah. So imagine my surprise when I read the book. Quite a bit so different. I think Kubrick maybe captured some of that, you know, the terror, the dread that you feel from it. But obviously, you had to have that family, how you care about everybody, for it to work. And that didn't have it. But Mick Garris's did. And, I mean, he was limited by what he could do for television. But he did a damn good job of bringing out all the stuff from the novel that I wish Kubrick would have included.
I think Steven Weber was a very good Jack Torrance, like from the book. I think that people can't see past the other Jack. And I get it. But I mean, if you're going from, you know, the book, I'm not saying that Steven Weber is, you know, of the same caliber as an actor, certainly, but man, he was a really good book, Jack. And, in fact, when I was reading, Dr. Sleep, you know, there's one scene at the end.
Yeah.
It's considerably different than what happens in the movie. But you know, he just basically kind of shows up for 1 second. And when Danny looks back and at the, you know, the ruins of the Overlook, and there's the ghost of his dad just kind of standing there, you know, just sort of regarding him, without trying, I pictured Steven Weber. Like, that's just who was in my head.
Same here.
So that's interesting. So I'm not the only one. I'm like, there's no one else. No one else liked that at all.
But, I love Jack Nicholson, but you know, right from the get go, he was, you know, crazy. So
Exactly. Well, see, there you go. That's what I always say. You know, he was crazy from before the hotel even came into play. You know, so
absolutely. Sort of. And then you know, you mentioned Dr. Sleep. When that I read that, and then I heard they were doing a film version of it, I was like, how in the hell are they going to pull this off? You got the fans of Kubrick, you got fans of the book, you got fans of the McGarris mm-hmm. version. How are you going to mold this together? And he pulled it off. Did he pull it off?
Yeah. I know it's like it made so my unpopular opinion is that I'm just not a fan of the Kubrick version. But that really made me like it more. I'm like, this sort of really ties it all together okay. I'm sort of good at this. And Henry Thomas playing Jack was weird, but still fascinating and cool.
Absolutely.
Rebecca Ferguson as was it Maggie the Hat? Is that her name?
Rose the Hat.
Oh, Rose the Hat. Rose the Hat, right.
Yeah.
She was just amazing and so perfect. Oh my god. Now reading that, I actually was picturing Uma Thurman the whole time. Because they kept telling us how tall she was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm just like, Uma Thurman is who I kept. That's who
I can see that
was. But my god, Rebecca Ferguson was fantastic as Rose the Hat. Oh man.
Yeah, I don't remember who I pictured when I was reading that initially. Because I mean they hadn't even I don't think they'd even talked about it being a movie yet when I did read it. No. So I didn't even picture Ewan McGregor either. So
no.
Yeah, but Herman, I mean I liked him. I thought
he was good. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really good. And then, you know, like Ready Player One even has a Shining nod in it. Do you remember that?
I don't recall the nod. There's so many nods, to be fair, in that movie.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's filled with them. But, yeah, they end up there. They're dancing in the ballroom, him and her. And then you have the corpses. And then I want to say they had the hallway in room 237, like the key. Okay. I mean, it was a blatant nod. So, but yeah.
As many were. That's really cool. Yeah, I don't recall that, but oh my god. I mean, just come on. The final battle was freaking a Gundam versus Mechagodzilla. I mean, I'm in. Say no more. I'm in.
That movie was amazing. I loved it. I had a good time. It was just, you know, pure geek, you know. That's all it was.
100%. And the novelty of it is like, oh, this could never happen. But now we have things like Fortnite that literally just pull every license all together. And all these kids are playing with all these like random freaking, like you have like somebody dressed up as, you know, the Xenomorph and he's shooting a gun and he's going against like Peter Griffin holding a gun. And, you know, I don't know. It's just bizarre.
Yeah, no, I'm too old for that. My kids play it, you know, and they're trying to talk to me about it. I'm like, I don't like internet. I don't like the internet. I like to play by myself.
Get the internet box out of my face.
Yeah. Be like, you know, like Thor funny. With Noobmaster 69, you know, I'd be getting all pissed and threatening them and stuff. And the next thing I know, I'm arrested for threatening minors and stuff. So, yeah, it's best that I stay off of that.
Wow, what a solid Thor Ragnarok reference you just made. Noobmaster, what was it, 39 or whatever?
Yep.
I loved how everybody was like trying to, they had all these theories as to who that was, as if it needed to be anybody we knew. Like, oh, is it Deadpool? Is Deadpool really Noobmaster 39 or whatever?
I mean, wouldn't that be the best though if it was?
Yeah, it would be. Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, it's I couldn't keep up with that online. There's no way. I just don't, you know, my reflexes are slower now. And, you know, of course I'm going to admit that. But yeah, I couldn't do it.
Well, let's circle back to we're approaching an hour now. I want to make sure we talk a little bit more about your writing. So now before the interview, you actually mentioned a few things, to me over Messenger that you actually have coming down the pipeline, and you know, if it's okay, if I could ask about some of this stuff.
Ask what?
I know you said you're working on a book about the FX world,
Yes.
In conjunction with Horror Hound.
Correct.
So as I got to tell you, like as a practical effects junkie, to me, that sounds very, very cool. Can you tell us anything more about that?
I really don't. It's about the FX world with a twist. I'm coming at it as a, you know, just a geek fan and wanting to celebrate, you know, the history of FX and why are you in it? What was it you loved about it? You know, I kind of envision it as like this round table of all the FX guys just sitting around bullshitting about what they do and why they love it.
Nice. So you're going out seeking out interviews for this and stuff?
Yeah, I've interviewed several. Steve Johnson, he was fun.
Nice.
You know, I've been a Steve Johnson fan, you know, well, since Fangoria and all the way through.
Awesome, man.
And then Justin Raleigh of Fractured FX. Adam Johansson of Odd Studios. They did the effects for Thor, Ragnarok. Neville Page.
Oh yeah, right. Neville Page. I remember Neville Page. He did what did he work on? I can't remember. He was always on that show, that Face Off show.
Face Off. Yep. Yep. He was one of the judges usually. He, I believe, worked on Avatar. I'd have to bring his filmography up again, but so I've got some lined up that haven't completed their interviews yet, but it's like Steve Wang, Tom Savini, of course. And Mr. Greg Nicotero, Tom Woodruff Jr., Alec Gillis. I accidentally called Alec Gillis Alec Guinness.
But, I'm sure you're not the first, though. Let's be real.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it's
very
a big deal.
Cool. Damn, that is a who's who. That is really, really cool, man. I love practical effects. I mean,
yeah, me too.
I'm all for celebrating them and. So you need Rick Baker.
I want to Rick Baker. God, I hope I can get a chance to talk to him, and also the elusive Mr. Rob Bottin.
Is
like, you know, he is the reason I love werewolves. He is the reason I initially wanted to be a special effects artist, but I grew up in like in North Missouri, and it just didn't seem, you know, realistic. So, you know, law enforcement, right. But yeah, those.
Yeah. And, so Rob Bottin, you know, he did The Howling, right?
RoboCop and Total Recall. Yeah,
RoboCop. And, now did he do The Thing? Was that Bottin?
Yes. Yep. He did the 1981 Thing. Yes.
I mean, come on. You really don't need to say more than The Thing.
Yeah, The Thing. Yeah, we'll see. And okay, there's two camps as far as like werewolves go. You know, people are like Rick Baker, Rob Bottin. I tend to think Rob Bottin had the better werewolf, but a lot of people didn't like the ears. I like it, so it's unique.
So I love both a lot, and I prefer American Werewolf as a movie, but I think that the werewolf in that movie, they did a really, really good job. John Landis did a really good job of making us not realize how limited the movement was, because the face looks so good.
Oh yeah.
But
it does.
There isn't much more than the face and the shoulders. So, you know, I mean, they had that thing on like a wheelbarrow. Right. I mean, they're just rolling it around. It didn't like its back legs didn't even move. So
it was like, you know, I think Rick Baker's hand was in it, you know, making the mouth move. I don't know. I can't.
I mean, it's an amazing, iconic design. I prefer two legged werewolves anyway. So like usually the four legged ones that like I don't care about at all. So that is definitely my favorite of the four legged ones. But I do prefer that movie. But you know, I agree with you. Like, I mean, I think the Bob Bottin werewolf is in The Howling is
better. Yeah. You know, and Steve Johnson did an amazing one. You know, he's pretty humble about it. When I'm you know, being all fanboy about it, you know, for Bad Moon.
Yeah, I mean, Bad Moon is when I was a kid, I thought it was the coolest looking werewolf. I look back and I'm like, I don't think it's the best. He's a little fuzzy. He's a little stuffed animal-y. I kind of want to just hug him. He looks kind of like a good boy. But he's really cool. And you know, I love that silver look. He's like a cool silver werewolf. I love that. Yeah.
You know, and I'd read the book that it was based on, you know, Thor, you know, and it's the book itself is taken from the dog's point of view. So then when I saw the film, I thought they did an excellent job with it. I feel like Michael, was it Paré? You say his last name from Streets of Fire.
I remember. Yeah. I do remember Muriel Hemingway, right? She's.
Yes, Muriel.
Muriel Hemingway is the lead in it, but. Yeah,
and then like Mason Gamble, he was like the Richie Rich kid, but Dennis the Menace kid, I think, was the little boy. I could be wrong about that, but
okay.
Yeah. I don't know.
You know, it's been a long ass time since I've seen that movie. I loved it when I was a kid, though. I remember renting it more than once, thinking it was just like this like hidden gem werewolf movie. I thought it was pretty cool.
Definitely
better than Silver Bullet. That's another one that needs to be remade. Please, somebody make a cycle of the werewolf.
Oh yeah, you know, I got a friend. He's all about Cycle of the Werewolf. I mean, or the Silver Bullet. You know, based on Cycle of the Werewolf. But yeah, I agree with you. It needs to be remade. I wasn't a real fan of how that werewolf looked.
No, he's real weird. I mean,
like a teddy bear.
Like he's bear-like. It's weird. I dig the whole like, you know, his eye gets shot out, and you know he still keeps that. When he's human and when he's the wolf, and there's, but yeah, that movie's not great. But
I was disappointed.
But we've managed to get away from your writing once again. You got to talk about yourself, man.
Okay, all right.
FX. So these are all these cool people that are going to be in this book. So this is awesome. I don't know if you. Can say more about it or not, but is this something you're hoping to get out in the next couple of years, or is it sooner than that? Like, what are you thinking?
I'm hoping sooner. I've just got a few more to speak with, and then I'm going to put everything together. So I'm hoping within the next year, year and a half. But I do have, you know, as far as like the cover things, like it's a work in progress, and it's been fun talking to these, you know, heroes of mine. And then, you know, some of the new ones that have been coming out, you know, like Justin Raleigh, they worked on Swamp Thing, you know, amazing
the show.
Work. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing. I mean, you can't, I think that you know, I was talking to Derek Rook, about this, and you know, he is the biggest Swamp Thing fan in the entire universe. And he got me to go back and read the Alan Moore run. I mean, absolutely awesome. I loved it. And so I did that before the show, and that we watched the show together. We thought it'd be cool to just check out together. And it's like, you know, the show was pretty flawed, but it had some good stuff in there. But oh my God, that suit was so perfect. And Derek Mears was so good as Swamp Thing that feel like, you know, we were both talking about this, and it's like, the next one should just be CG. I just feel like as much as we both love practical effects, like I just don't think you can outdo that suit. It was perfect. It was the most amazing suit.
Yeah, and like you said, it was flawed. They were like combining some different storylines. I mean, they had Woodrue in there. You know, what's his name? Kevin. I can't think of his last name, but
Durant.
Durant. Yeah. There you go. And then, you know, they had the Blue Devil, which was awesome.
So cool. Ian Ziering was the Blue Devil.
Yep. And it just, then they canceled it. And oh my God, I was just heartbroken. Because they'd gotten it right. As flawed as it was, they got it right. And it's like same with Constantine, you know, the TV show with Matt Ryan. Uh-huh. They got it right.
Yeah, he was a perfect casting choice. I mean, he got to play the character so many times in animation afterwards, which was really cool. And Matt Ryan, I actually was introduced to because of video games, because of he did an Assassin's Creed. He did the fourth Assassin's Creed, which was all pirates. And that was the only Assassin's Creed game I have ever played to this day. I saw it. I'm like, it was called Black Flag, I think.
Yeah.
And it was just all pirates. I'm like, this is the most badass. I have to enter the series at number 4. And I loved it so freaking much, but I don't know. I was kind of full. I didn't need more Assassin's Creed. There's like 1,000 more games. But yeah, Matt Ryan was the main character in that. And he was freaking awesome.
Did not know that. Yeah, he's a great actor. I'd love to meet the guy at some point.
But
like Reeves version too. I mean, he's definitely an American version of Constantine, but so there's that. But all right, I'll put it back to the writing again. Sorry.
Well, so you got some other stuff. I don't know if you can talk about anything, but you said you're working on some screenplays, a documentary pitch, and you said you're even working on some graphic novel adaptations of other books. That's all freaking exciting, all over the map, man. Like, anything you can give us would be awesome.
Okay. We'll start with the screenplays. The one I can talk the most about, or as far as the most, is where I'm at with it. It is called Mincemeat. It's a werewolf tale like no other. I can't really say any more than that. Praying to God nobody beats me to the punch. It's been about a year and a half that I've been working on it. Eobon Press. And then Stephen Romano and I interviewed those guys for it was my first big article for Horror Hound. And he did a book called Project 51, and he was asking for ideas, contributions to this. And so I had this werewolf story in my head since I was a kid. And so I reached out to him and just kind of gave my idea, and he developed it into a short story called To Howl. So when I decided I wanted to go further with I wanted to try, filmmaking, I reached out to him and I optioned it from him. Now it's only a 3-page short story, not even quite 3 pages. And he was wondering how I was going to expand on that. Well, I figured it out. Nice. So almost done with the screenplay. I hope so. This is taking some time.
Is this your first foray into writing screenplays?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
So
good for you. That's awesome.
And then I have optioned a short story by Wesley Southard called Arrearages. It's kind of a revenge flick. Another is by British author Paul Kane. You might know him. He is the one that did the Sherlock Holmes and the Servants of Hell, the Sherlock Holmes and Cenobites crossover. I reached out to him initially because I wanted to see if I could even try with that one, and he's right. There's no way I could do that yet. So I am adapting another one of his stories, called The Between. There's another one. Dollar Baby. So I reached out to the Dollar Baby program. It didn't have a lot left, that I could option. I'm working on the screenplay for one of the novellas or short stories from Everything It's Eventual. It is that feeling you can only say what it is in French. And it has been a trick of trying to figure out the right way to do this. It's a kind of a deja vu it's going to be a trick. It's challenging for sure, but so yeah, that's what I've been working on too on the side.
Very cool. We had a little bit of a connectivity issues as you were kind of talking there at the end. So hopefully we got all of that. But great stuff. It sounds like, you're just like going full force in a million different directions. And I just hope you're not spreading yourself too thin, because these are all really exciting projects, and I can't wait to see some of them start out.
I tend to do that. I think Nathan at Horror Hound described me as intense.
Yeah.
So I get excited.
You're just really like camping. Is that why?
Oh, no, Yeah, good. I like that. But well, yeah, I get excited about stuff. What's that?
I'm a dad, so it happens. You know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, good, man. From one dad to another. What do you think?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's fun for a while. Then it's not. Then it's okay again.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you. I
mean, that's towards in a nutshell, the end of it, but no.
It's great. But yeah, it is. It's great. It's got its great moments. But yeah. 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 It's good to be a dad.
And get an excuse to make terrible jokes. Well,
yeah, well, yeah.
You know, you're real intense, but you know, you clearly got a lot of drive, and it seems like maybe you feel like you're making up for lost time. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a lot of people who tend to go back to their passion after a while away tend to be like, okay, enough missed time now. I got all those Iron Maiden wasted years.
Oh, sure, it is that. Yeah, you know, when I turned 50, panic set in, and it was like, and I always thought that whole midlife crisis was a bunch of bullshit, but no, it really is. It's like, I feel like I'm running out of time and there's still so much more I want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we ain't getting any younger, so it's kind of, I'm reminded of the Henry Rollins quote, right? There's no such thing as free time. It's just time. So go.
There you go.
Right. I mean, that's
hey,
it,
that's good. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
that's like one of my favorite quotes. I mean, like, you know, now so back really, really quick before we kind of get into the last thing. Horror Hound Weekend, yep. Guys, March 22nd to 24th. You got to go. It's going to be freaking awesome. Sam Raimi's going to be there. Henry Rollins, yep. Juliette Lewis, like literally a million people are going to be there. It's the sponsors that you guys get for this thing are nuts. Like, I love these people. Freaking, you got Terror Threads and Fright Rags and Trick or Treat Studios. I mean, like, it's freaking awesome stuff, man.
Yeah, and yeah, you know, we got, festival. You know, oh, yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, we got comic book artists. We got James Kirik from American Mythology Comics. Nice. You know, ton of great artists. You know, Jason Edmiston, big fan. Gary Pullen, Maddie Tobin. Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. Yeah. I can't wait. So as of the recording of this episode, it's less than 2 weeks away. It's a week and a half away. Like, it's nuts.
Yeah.
I can't wait. So this is probably coming out on Tuesday. So it's going to be less than 1 week away, I would say, by the date this probably drops. We'll see. Sometimes I'm wrong. You know, life is weird, but sometimes timey wimey stuff happens. So before we get out of here, this is funny, right? So like, my plan is to go, you know, oh, let's swing it back around to some retro nostalgia because we are retro Redoctopus. But guess what? We've been talking about retro shit the whole episode, but hey,
no kidding.
But hey, that's okay. That's what fans do. And that's what we are. So, and since horror is your tool in trade, I'm going to ask you this question. I'm going to ask you for your five top horror movies / franchises that you cannot live without. So it can be either a movie or a franchise. So if you say, like, you know, Halloween could be the franchise. That's fine.
Okay. All right. So we'll go with the top, Salem's Lot. The Toby Hooper one. And then The Howling, The Thing.
Nice.
Fright Night.
Oh, there's yes.
The remake of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I love that friggin' movie.
Isn't it great?
I love the Andrew Bjornsky one.
Oh yeah,
Arlie Ermey. Man, I love that movie.
Yeah,
kicks ass. I like the prequel too. I like those two.
I enjoyed it too.
Honestly, like, for me, it's like the first one and those two. I don't care about any of the other ones. I love the first one and I love those two. That's my chainsaw. Great,
you know, freaking pick. People go, you know, something about remakes and stuff. I'm like, there are some that get it right. You know, you got The Hills Have Eyes. That was amazing.
That was a great remake. I know, that was such a good remake.
Yep.
Such a good remake. That's far superior to the original. Absolutely.
Sure. That's it.
Very cool. That's so I'm gonna answer it too. So I have I have The Thing as well. That's our bit of overlap. I'm also going to say, you know, the Alien franchise, but it's mostly the first one, because that's the horror film. Let's be real.
Sure, yes.
I'm going to say Alien. I cannot live without xenomorphs in my life. Then I'm going to say Predator, because I have the Alien. I got to go Predator.
Sure.
I love the monsters. That's all I can say. The classic Universal Frankenstein series, and I'm talking all eight. Yes, even House of Frankenstein, House of Dracula, and Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, all eight.
Wow. That's just writing about that.
Yep. My favorite is, of course, Bride, but that's just because, that is a perfect black comedy. It's a perfect black comedy, and it had no business being any sort of comedy after that first movie, and it is so good.
Yeah,
every second of that movie is perfect.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Also, I'm going to end with the original Godzilla. Now we could go, because I'm such a Godzilla nut. Now I can claim the whole franchise, but really that first movie, just like with Alien, that is the horror one, and I mean Minus One was too, to a point.
Yeah,
but like that first one, it is so dark in palette. It is so dark, black. Like, it is absolutely terrifying. And even as goofy as the suit looked, like, he's I think the most terrifying.
He's scary. Yep, absolutely. And then, you know, Minus One, I haven't seen the black and white version of that yet, and I'm dying to see it.
Oh, neither have I. I wanted to.
Because that's how it ought to be seen. It's kind of like The Mist when they did the back, you know, black and white version of that. Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. That was my other fifth one.
That is another great flick that does not get enough credit. That is a great movie. I love that movie.
So, yeah.
Good stuff.
Black and white. A lot of times that black and white, man, it just really brings out the stark terror. It's absolutely just a feeling.
Absolutely, man. Like, so, okay, I'll add my number six, since you got, that's your number six, right?
All right.
So I'm going to add Them from the 50s, the giant ant movie.
I love that.
What's that?
James Whitmore from Shawshank Redemption was in Them, wasn't he? He's like that. Oh, come on, man. Yeah, never mind. Go on. Yep.
Oh, damn. I didn't realize it. That movie is so great. And I think that one of the things that I think it really added to horror in general, or I don't know that it invented it or anything, I'm not going to claim that, but it used it really well, is sound. The repetition of like a Pavlovian response with you know, because it had the sound that the ants made. In real life it was like just a recording of tree frogs. It's just kind of a chirping sound, but in the movie it's supposedly the sound that the ants are making, and you hear them before you see them. So you hear this weird, creepy chirping sort of a tone, and you're looking around and you're like, oh my God. And then they just show up and eat you. They kill you. You're dead. I mean, really very creepy movie. Love it.
Oh yeah. Scared the hell out of me as a little kid.
Yeah. Yeah. And they make you wait to see them too. Like, they really like show you the devastation and what they can do. And then finally, you get to see them. And then they're in it a decent amount. You know, there's only two models for that movie. They only made two ants.
I think I knew that. I think I knew that.
So you never see more than two at a time. They'll be like, oh, there's two over there. Oh, and look, over there, there's two over there. Oh, and look, there's two over there.
Nice.
It's the same thing they did with the Slea Stack, who also completely terrified me as a kid on Land of the Lost. They only had three Slea Stack costumes.
Man, I forgot all about Land of the Lost.
Yeah. And then they made the Slea Stack. There was like a yellow Slea Stack guy who could talk. And they actually cannibalized one of the three costumes. They didn't make a new one. They literally just only had two now.
Oh my God. They painted one yellow. Guys back then.
I know, man. I know. It's like freaking, that was like, those were the Crofts, right? Did that?
Yep. Yep. So. I think you're right. Yep.
So, okay, last question, and then we'll get out of here. Since you're such a Stephen King nut, I'm going to ask you as a screenwriter, if you could remake or make for the first time any one King flick, what would it be?
Oh my God. Christine.
Okay. Interesting. I love Christine. So why would you, what are you going to bring to the table?
There was so much that they left out. I love Carpenter's version. I read the book before I saw the movie. But they left out LeBay, his corpse, riding shotgun. And every time he killed somebody, those corpses showed up in the car. Mm-hmm. Darnell's death was way better in the book. The car drives through his house.
That's a really good justification, man. I mean, like, as much as I love the movie and I sort of like think it did a good job.
Yeah.
Knew where to make the cuts kind of a thing, like Lord of the Rings movies or something like it's yeah. Like, you're not going to fit everything. So let's like do this well. I think they did a good job. But yeah. The difference of in the book, it's not an evil car. It's right. A ghost possessing his car. And in the movie, she was born bad.
Yep. It was just the car itself.
The car itself. So I love the two. I love that both versions exist, and I really enjoy both versions a lot. I love the idea that it's... I really just love both.
Yeah, me too. I interviewed Keith Gordon and Alexandra Paul and William Ostrander that played Buddy Repperton.
Yeah, they're the ones that do the...
Yeah, nice guy. But I'm sitting there like, holy shit, I'm talking to Buddy Repperton. Holy shit, I'm talking to Arnie Cunningham. Holy shit,
I'm talking to Buddy, the 45-year-old teenager.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, yes, exactly. I went to school with a bully like that, so yeah, I got it. He was terrifying.
He got held back a couple times. By a couple times, I mean 20 years.
Yeah, 20 years of holding back. Yep, he was making a career out of that shop class.
I know. He's really got to just stop pulling his switchblade out. That's the problem. So I think if I'm going to answer the question, I would say I would have said Firestarter. For the longest time, that was my answer, but they ruined it forever with that stupid Zac Efron movie. It sucked.
Dude.
And now I don't even care.
Dude.
Because I really like that book. And I really like John Rainbird as a character. And they fucked
him
up.
What the hell happened there? What happened? It's like all of a sudden it just goes this other direction.
I know they make the good guy. They make the dad like creepy and like, oh man, you guys just, I don't know what you're doing. John Rainbird should be an irredeemable psychopath.
Yeah. Cause his comeuppance at the end, that's what I was waiting for.
Yeah.
And I love that story too. I'm right there with you. And Mark L. Lester, who directed Commando, I interviewed him about Firestarter, the original one.
Oh, nice, yeah.
They did an awesome job with the effects, what they could do back then. They did a great job with the book, but they could do so much more with it.
Definitely. Absolutely. It's a cool little flick, the original. And, obviously a lot of it is carried by the adorableness of Drew Barrymore and...
Right.
And stuff, but it's a cool little flick. It's not great. It's just it's cool.
Not great.
Man, they fucked up John Rainbird so bad. I mean, he's played by who plays him? Italian
George Scott. George C. Scott played him.
George C. Scott, right? Like, come on, man! You can't just hire a freaking Native American. I mean, why wasn't it Billy from Predator? Why?
Oh my God! That's kind of exactly. That's kind of how I bring you.
God. I wish, somewhere in the multiverse, there is an Earth where Sonny got to play John Rainbird and all is well. Like,
oh yeah,
that should have happened. I don't know why it didn't. He would have been friggin' perfect. So my real answer, because they fucked up Firestarter a second time, is going to be the Dark Half. I love the Dark Half. And just like you said with Christine, there's such differences in the movie and in the book, because in the movie it's like they show you the whole time that he was played by Timothy Hutton as well. And so you're like, oh, they're he's playing the two characters. Okay, well, but in the book, he wasn't supposed to look like him at all. He was supposed to be a completely different looking guy. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of room to like make the audience wonder what the guy looks like. And especially yeah. now, because we know that the other version exists, we're going to be expecting the people who haven't read the book are going to expect that it is just going to be played by the same actor. And I think there's a lot you can do to play with that. And oh my God, the squirming that happened when I was reading that book with like,
oh, yeah.
the stepping on the birds at the end. Mm-hmm. Like, do you remember like all the sparrows are flying again. And yeah, then like,
there's I remember.
Like a billion sparrow corpses on the ground that he has to walk over. Oh my God.
Yep, I remember that.
Their tiny bones were breaking every time he took a step. And I'm like, it's grossed me out so bad.
I was a senior in high school when I read that. And, it was the eye and the tooth and stuff in his brain. I think. That
oh yeah. The, yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Dude, that's an awesome movie. I mean, an awesome book. I really love that book, and it just never gets brought up as one of his better ones. I think it's great. I think it's really
good. Yeah, you know, in the film version, Michael Rooker, you know, played Alan, can't think of his last name Pangborn. Right now, but the sheriff. Pangborn. From that moment on, anytime I read anything with Pangborn in it, I'm picturing Michael Rooker.
Michael Rooker.
Yep. So, great book. But yeah, I agree with you. A remake. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I think that'd be cool.
Yeah.
I love Alan Pangborn because he shows up again in Needful Things.
And, right. Ed Harris plays him in Needful Things. That's right.
Right. But I think my favorite actor who got to play him was Scott Glenn, who played him in that Castle Rock show that I did not end up liking, but I think it started out amazing.
Yeah, I agree with you. I did like the ending. I think when we find out, it's kind of like a thinny, which is something that he brought about in the dark tower.
Yeah, we got there in the show, and my wife had, she loves Stephen King, but mm-hmm. she could never do the Dark Tower. She could just never get into it. She was just,
it took not me a while fan.
And I've read all the Dark Tower, and we got to the end, I'm like, oh my God, it's a motherfucking Finney. Like, yep. Oh yep. My
I,
God,
that's a Finney.
I know, I did the same thing.
Yep. Yeah. Good and show. Then I think I lost you.
Yeah, go ahead, say it again, start over.
Did you see the second season?
Parts. I saw parts of the second season.
But well, she did a great job with you know, kind of channeling Kathy Bates.
Yes.
Or Annie, but it was good. I liked it.
Yeah, it just got bonkers. I don't know. It just got so out there. And
they were
with
Salem's Lot towards the end of it, because they brought up Jerusalem's Lot and then they mm-hmm. just kind of left it hanging. So
they did. Yeah, it ended up being a little bit too soupy for my Stephen King soup. I was looking but for more stew. It was a little runny for my taste.
But you're right. Scott Glenn, he was a great Alan Pangborn.
I fucking love that guy.
Big fan ever since The Keep.
Oh, The Keep, yeah, nice. I also love Silverado.
Silverado. I was just watching a bit of that the other day.
I love that movie. Michael, thank you so much for coming on, man. Can you, if you have anything else you'd like to promote for, you know, the listeners out there that you want, where people can find your stuff, anything at all you want to shout out for socials, anything like that, now's your time.
Okay. First of all, thank you for having me on the show. I've had a great time. It's been a lot of fun. If you're interested in anything that I'm up to, holler at me on Facebook. That's usually the social media place I'm at. I can't keep up with Twitter or Threads or whatever the hell it is now. So I'm still trying to figure out Instagram. So,
well, good luck. Good luck to you, sir. Yeah, as a man over 50, it's not easy. You know, these things don't come with a manual. Okay.
Exactly. You know what? I've been trying to learn like things like After Effects and Adobe Premiere and all that. Yeah, it's been stressful. Well,
that is legitimately hard. I'm not versed in any of that stuff. I use Adobe
a lot for my day job. I do, you know, a lot of Photoshop, a lot of Illustrator, a lot of InDesign stuff. But
nice.
I never learned Premiere, but you know, it is still the standard. So many people just use Premiere after all these years.
Yeah, I keep hearing that. So that's why, you know, I dabbled in it. You know, I did like the 7-day free trial and all that, and I still know fuck all. So.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to take, you know, really, at least some online classes or something like that. But I mean, you know, YouTube as a resource for anything, like anything at all, changing a toilet, you know,
dude, I was
like, whatever, learning Premiere, yeah. Anything. Like, there are videos there for free.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's pretty
awesome. Yeah, I was doing the tutorials and stuff. I've learned how to green screen now. I know how to do that.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool. Well, thanks again for coming by, man. It's been a really, really great time geeking out with you over horror. And, you know, it's pretty much my favorite thing. So speaking of horror, let's one more plug for the Horror Hound Weekend 2024, March 22nd through the 24th. That's in the Sharonville Convention Center in Cincinnati, Ohio. And we will be there. Michael, myself, Derek Rook, we're going to all be there. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait to see you. And all the famous people, all them too. Yeah. But, yeah. But
most of all us.
What's that?
Most of all us.
Most of all us. That's what I like to say. So definitely stop by and you will have yourself a good time. And if you don't live close by, you probably don't live as far as we do. So we're making it, so you can too. So that pretty much wraps up the episode, guys. If you haven't jumped ship by now, we certainly hope you've enjoyed this week's bonus journey over the treacherous waters of all the things that made growing up awesome. If you like what you've heard, please hit up our popular Facebook group and subscribe to the show on your podcast app of choice. You can also find us on X at Redoctopus and now on Good Pods, where you can like episodes, leave views, and give us some much needed feedback. We love to hear that. So please leave us your feedback. As well as being part of the Inebriard Podcast Network, Retro Redoctopus is a full-fledged member of the Dorkening Podcast Network. So if you get a chance, please check out our sister shows like Epic Tales from the Sewers with our co-host, Justin Cooper, Let's Not with Michelle and Sam, Throwdown Thursday with Patsy and Ashes, Nerds of Unusual Origin, Hooked on Movies, That Strange Show, Shark Bites. There's so many shows on the Dorkening. You are definitely bound to find one or two or 10 that you're going to love. So just take my word for it. For more information or to subscribe to us or any of these great shows, please visit thedorkening.com and be sure to check out our killer sponsors, Deadly Grounds Coffee, coffee to die for. Before I finally do a little call sign at the end here, let me let you out of the brig there, Mike. I know it's kind of disgusting down there. So you might, I mean, take a kombucha for the road just in case.
Oh, God. I thought you liked me.
If nothing else, you can just pour it out the window and use it to piss in later on. You know.
Yeah, no, I pour it out the window for it to keep growing. I mean, how do you guys drink this mold? Yeah. God.
Well, you know, then don't. Fine. Just we'll save the kombucha for the next person. Fine. You look a gift kombucha in the mouth. I've been your host. My name's Parasite Steve, and it is indeed a sad thing your adventures have ended here. Good night, everybody.
For more shows like the one you just heard, check out the Dorkening Podcast Network at thedorkening.com.